I want to talk a little bit about the wedding supper. So why we have one, and granted, yes, it's a foreshadow of things to come, and things that obviously aren't here yet. It's, to best of my knowledge, I don't know of any synagogue who does a wedding celebration anywhere, unless they have to be Messianic. That's the only chance I can think of, if that. It's not even common among Messianics either. The wedding celebration is kind of been a long time coming, and that over the years, more and more information is understood about Sukkot and tabernacles. When it was held several years ago, we all called it tabernacles. And as we grew in our walk with God, we understood a little bit more. And it came to being that a wedding seems to correspond with Sukkot very well, at least toward the end of it. And that's revealed to us in Revelations as well as in Matthew? Yeah, Matthew. Both books indicate there is a wedding or something regarding a wedding is important because it says it many times. New Jerusalem looks like a wedding, looks like a bride adorned for her wedding. And the Messiah calls himself a bridegroom, so does John the Baptist, calls the Messiah the bridegroom. So we're going to explore those just a little bit today. It's nothing new or new, it's just that it's good to cover. It explains a little bit as to why we're having a celebration this evening. We're going to start out in the book of John. John chapter 3, verse 29. John chapter 3, verse 29. Actually, we're going to back up a little bit. 29, that's the section which it talks about. We're going to read from verse 22 through to verse 36. After these things, Jesus and his disciples came into the land of Judea. And there he reigned with them and baptized. Now John also was baptizing and in Enion, near Salim, because there was much water there, and they came and were baptized. For John had not yet been thrown into prison. Then there arose a dispute between some of John's disciples and the Jews about purification. They came to John and said, Rabbi, he who is with you beyond the Jordan, to whom you have testified, behold, he is baptizing, and all are coming to him. Apologize, my honeycomb that I ate earlier is still there in my throat. John answered and said, verse 27, A man can receive nothing unless it has been given to him from heaven. You yourselves bear me witness that I said, I am not the Christ, but I have been sent before him. He who has the bride is the bridegroom. But the friend of the bridegroom, who stands and hears him, rejoices greatly because of the bridegroom's voice. Therefore, this joy of mine is fulfilled. He must increase, but I must decrease. He who comes from above is above all. He who is of the earth is earthly and speaks of the earth. He who comes from heaven is above all. And what he has seen and heard, that he testifies, and no one receives his testimony. He who has received his testimony has certified that God is true. For he whom God has sent speaks the words of God, for God does not give the Spirit by measure. The Father loves the Son and has given all things into his hand. He who believes in the Son has everlasting life, and he who does not believe the Son shall not see life, but the wrath of God abides on him. It's a sobering section regarding what John the Baptist is trying to tell his disciples. He's discussing, as it quite clearly states, that, yes, I baptize as well as the Messiah. We both have been baptizing. But it is time for me to diminish. Whether or not he knew he was going to be thrown in prison and be slaughtered or killed or not, is up for argument. But the fact that he was going to be going away seems to be clear of his own words. He knew something was going to be happening to him, that he was going to be decreasing. But he pointed out that he's still in rejoice. He still is pleased because the bridegroom is enjoying his bride. The bridegroom is full of life. Many of you remember your wedding days. Most of you, I would hope, remember your wedding days. Maybe not the anniversaries, but at least the days. You remember the feelings that you had, the emotions, the excitement, the anticipation. All of that brought joy upon your faces. To those around you, they all saw it. I remember my wedding day that I had a grin on my face almost all day long. And as a result, it's slightly contagious. I mean, people around you, he's smiling all the time, and everybody else starts to smile. They all rejoice with you. And Gary smiled most of the time, except when he had to give his speech. He was a little bit nervous. But we all rejoice with the bride and bridegroom, which is one of the reasons why John used this analogy, is because it explained that even though it is disappointing to his own personal disciples that he is going to be decreasing, he knew that it was still a glorious time because the bridegroom was going to be increasing. I'm going to continue on. That's not the only place that it talks about the bridegroom or God referring to himself as a bridegroom. In Isaiah chapter 62, this is God speaking now through, of course, the prophet Isaiah. I'm not going to read the entire chapter of 62. You know what? I have time. I'll read the first part of chapter 62 from verse 1 through can I read the whole chapter? I'll just read the whole chapter. Isaiah chapter 62. No, it's not very long. I'm just going to read the whole chapter. I have a little time. For Zion's sake, I will not hold my peace, and for Jerusalem's sake, I will not rest, until her righteousness goes forth as brightness, and her salvation as a lamp that burns. I want you to remember that, the statement, as a lamp that burns. The Gentiles shall see your righteousness, and all kings your glory. You shall be called by a new name, which the mouth of the Lord will name. You shall also be a crown of glory in the hand of the Lord, and a royal diadem in the hand of your God. You shall no longer be termed forsaken, nor shall your land any more be termed desolate. But you shall be called Hephzibah, and your land Beulah. For the Lord delights in you, and your land shall be married. For as a young man marries a virgin, so shall your sons marry you. As a bridegroom rejoices over the bride, so shall your God rejoice over you. I have set watchmen on your walls, O Jerusalem, who shall never hold their peace day or night. You who make mention of the Lord, do not keep silent, and give him no rest until he establishes, until he makes Jerusalem a praise in the earth. The Lord has sworn by his right hand and by the arm of his strength, surely I will no longer give your grain to be food for your enemies, and the sons of the foreigner shall not drink your new wine, for which you have labored. But those who have gathered it shall eat it, and praise the Lord. Those who have brought it together shall drink it in my courts. Go through the gates, prepare the way for the people. Build up the highway. Take out the stones, lift up a banner for the peoples. Indeed, the Lord has proclaimed to the end of the world, say to the daughter of Zion, surely your salvation is coming. Behold, his reward is with him, and his work before him. And they shall call them the holy people, the redeemed of the Lord. You shall be called sought out, a city not forsaken. I wanted to read Isaiah 62 because of Revelations 21, which describes more detail. By the way, Isaiah 62, of course, is for Zion's sake and for Jerusalem's sake I will not rest. The daughter of Zion, as we already know, is Jerusalem. That's commonly understood. The new Jerusalem is spoken of in Revelation chapter 21. Before we get there, before we go to Revelation 21, there are other places, by the way, God himself in verse 5 actually said, or this is, of course, through Isaiah, that as a bridegroom rejoices over the bride, so shall your God rejoice over you. That he's rejoicing over you as a bridegroom does. Well, the Messiah called himself a bridegroom. He repeats it three times. We're going to go to one of them. We're going to go to Luke. Luke chapter 5. I happen to like the book of Luke. Those of you who haven't noticed. There are reasons for it. I'll get to those at a later date. Chapter 5. This is a shortened, Luke records a shortened version of the Messiah's full quote. The full quote occurs in Mark and Matthew, but the balance of the quote is not significant to what I'm going to be talking about today, or what I'm talking about today. So Luke chapter 5, verse 33 through 35. Then they said to him, "Why do the disciples of John fast often?" And this is, "Fast often and make prayers, and likewise those of the Pharisees, but yours eat and drink." And he, from the Messiah, said, "Can you make the friends of the bridegroom fast while the bridegroom is with them? But the days will come when the bridegroom will be taken away from them. Then they will fast in those days." The full parable continues on, referring to stretched or pre-strung cloth, as well as new wine versus old wine in old wine skins. I want to focus on this for a moment, and that can you make the friends of the bridegroom fast while the bridegroom is with them? Can you bring the joy down of the person who is next to you when you are the bridegroom?
No.
You can't. They are rejoiceful for you. Mm-hmm. You can't make them go home, calm down, go take a nap, go fast, go mourn for on my wedding day. That doesn't work. One of the reasons why the Messiah stated this. Fasting is for talking and desiring God to hear your prayers, your needs. God, I need help. I'm having trouble. I need this fixed. And this is the only way I can talk to you. I am so torn up inside that I cannot eat. It's the purpose of fasting. It's to inflict your soul or inflict your body to where you feel that you are desperately in need of God. Well, at this point in time, God's with them. There's no reason to inflict pain upon yourself or inflict your soul when you can talk to him. He's your right-hand side or your left-hand side. You can talk to him. So you can't bring down somebody who is rejoiceful on a wedding day with the bridegroom who is also full of a huge contagious smile. It doesn't work. We're going to go to Revelations now. As this is not going to be a terribly long presentation, unlike my previous few of them. We're going to start in chapter 19, though. I'm going to read just verse 7 through 10. I don't want to read the entire chapter for reasons I can discuss at some other time, because it goes in much more detail than what I'm focusing on. Verse 7 of chapter 19. "Let us be glad and rejoice, and give him glory, for the marriage of the Lamb has come, and his wife has made herself ready. And to her it was granted to be arrayed in fine linen, clean and bright. The fine linen is the righteous acts of the saints." Then he said to me, "Write, blessed are those who are called to the marriage supper of the Lamb." He said to me, "These are the true sayings of God." And I fell at his feet to worship him. But he said to me, "See that you do not do that. I am your fellow servant and of your brethren who have the testimony of Jesus. Worship God. The testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy." On chapter 21. "And I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and first earth had passed away. Also there was no more sea. Then I, John, saw the holy new city, Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from heaven saying, 'Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them. And they shall be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying. There shall be no more pain, for the former things have passed away. Then he who sat on the throne said, Behold, I make all things new. And he said to me, Write, for these words are true and faithful. And he said to me, It is done. I am the Aleph and the Tov, the beginning and the end. I will give the fountain of the water of life freely to him who thirsts. And he who overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son. But the cowardly, unbelieving, abominable, murderers, sexual, immoral, sorcerers, adulterers, liars, shall have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. Then one of the seven angels, who had the seven bowls filled with the seven last plagues, came to me and talked with me, saying, Come, I will show you the bride, the Lamb's wife. And he carried me in the spirit to a great and high mountain, and showed me the great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from God, having the glory of God, and her light was like a most precious stone, like a jasper stone, clear as crystal. Also she had a great high wall with 12 gates, 12 angels at the gates, and the names written on them, which are the names of 12 tribes of the children of Israel. 3 gates on the east, 3 gates on the north, 3 gates on the south, and 3 gates on the west. Now the wall of the city had 12 foundations, and on them were the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. And he who talked with me had a gold reed to measure the city, its gates, and its walls. And the city is laid out as a square, and its length is as great as its breadth, and the measure of the city with the reed, 12,000 furlongs, its length, breadth, and height are equal. Then he measured its walls, 140 cubits, according to the measure of a man, that is, of an angel. The construction of its walls was of jasper, the city was pure gold, like clear glass. And the foundations of the wall of the city were adorned with all kinds of precious stones. The first foundation was jasper, the second sapphire, the third chalcedony, the fourth emerald, the fifth sardonyx, the sixth sardis, the seventh chrysolite, the eighth beryl, the ninth topaz, the tenth Christopause, the 11th jacinth, the 12th amethyst. The 12 gates were 12 pearls. Each individual gate was of one pearl. And the street of the city was pure gold, like transparent glass. But I saw no temple in it. For the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb are its temple. And the city had no need of the sun nor the moon to shine in it, for the glory of the God illuminated it. And the Lamb is its light. The nations of those who were saved shall walk in its light, and the kings of each earth bring their glory and honor to it. Its gates shall not be shut at all by day. There shall be no night there. And they shall bring the glory and the honor of the nations to it. But there shall by no means enter it anything that defiles or causes an abomination or a lie, but only those who are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. I don't know how many of you noticed the parallel between Adam and Eve during this description of the New Jerusalem. I mean, it jumps out at you as you go through the process that as Eve was created by God through a part of Adam, by his rib, so was the New Jerusalem created by God through the death of the Messiah. It's part of him had to die, or had to be taken out in order to God to make New Jerusalem. Same with Eve and Adam. One of the reasons why he's called the second Adam. One of the many reasons why he's called the second Adam. But what evokes the fact that this is described as a beautiful bride. It's adorned as a bride. I mean, many of you have, I'm sure, recalled what your bride dresses looked like. Your wedding dress. It was a wonderful decor of whatever you had chosen at the time. Decked yourself out. It looked quite wonderful, I'm sure. And it made you feel like you were desired by your soon-to-be husband, because it was very beautiful, it was very attractive. So the New Jerusalem was as well. And it's, what does it say it was clothed in?
Jewels.
Precious metals. Stones. As well as the righteous acts of the saints. These are things which God took from the Lamb, or from people to build, to create the Messiah's bride. And that's what we're celebrating today, or this evening, I'm sorry. That we're celebrating that wedding that God built, that He set up. The Messiah is going to be married to the New Jerusalem, which consists of all these wonderful things, consists of all 12 tribes, consists of all the apostles, plus all these wonderful stones and all these wonderful acts of the saints that slowly took time for God to build. Now we go to Matthew. We're concluded in Matthew chapter 25. Verses 1 through 13. Matthew 25, verse 1. Then the kingdom of heaven shall be likened to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. Now 5 of them were wise and 5 were foolish. Those who were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them. But the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. But while the bridegroom was delayed, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight, a cry was heard, "Behold, the bridegroom is coming. Go out to meet him." Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. The foolish said to the wise, "Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out." But the wise answered, saying, "No, lest there should not be enough oil for us and you, but rather go to those who sell and buy for yourself." And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the wedding. And the door was shut. Afterward, the other virgins came also, saying, "Lord, Lord, open up to us." But he answered and said, "Assuredly, I say to you, I do not know you. Watch, therefore, you neither know the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming." I wanted to read that last for a couple of reasons. Righteousness of the saints, which was the clothing, one of the clothing articles that were on, that is on New Jerusalem, spoken back in Revelations. We had discussed previously, as I had presented previously, regarding the olive tree, the fact that there are certain individuals who had that gift from God, the olive tree. And what was the olive tree's task? Is to give light, give oil. It's oil to illuminate, to shine brightly all things that God needs the oil for. Then virgins, of course, 5 of them had enough oil. They had enough olive tree life in them. They had enough things the olive tree represents in them. And the 5 did not. The fruit of the Spirit is one of the things that we all strive to have and to produce and to give and give glory to God using it. The olive and the oil is one of those fruits. It's one of the fruits that the Torah has. As I mentioned before, the Torah is not just a book that says the things not to do. There are things which you must do to obey the Torah, to have good fruits, to have good works. The olive tree represents one of those good works, to shine, to declare that there is God here, to dwell with Him, to be shine brightly. What does New Jerusalem do? It shines brightly. It has plenty of oil in it. In fact, it has so much oil, God Himself is there. He is in this land. They are the light that is needed. So each of us strive for that. We each strive to bring the Messiah into us, so we may mimic New Jerusalem. We may be adorned just as the bride is adorned. The righteous acts of the saints which clothe Jerusalem include shining brightly. Shining brightly to God. Shining brightly to man. So where darkness doesn't comprehend, we understood that. There was light and darkness didn't comprehend it. You shine brightly, evil, sin does not comprehend its opposite. That's our goal. That's one of the things we're celebrating. It's one of the reasons we have so many lights up here, is to shine brightly, to be beautiful to God. And that's our goal for this evening and for tonight's dinner and for tomorrow. Because unlike the past 7 days, including today, we've been dwelling in our sukkahs, and working at trying to build them, to make them beautiful, to make them have many fruits of the Spirit, and to dwell with God using those sukkahs. Well, when the New Jerusalem comes and God has finished building our sukkahs, our New Jerusalem that we dwell in and live in, he then presents it to his son. Now you can marry it. Now you two can be one. You can dwell together. You can be one, as Adam and Eve were one. That's the desire of God. Desire of man is the desire of us, and as well as the Messiah. We all desire to be at one with God. That's the function and why we celebrate the wedding feast this evening. I wanted to focus on earlier when I pointed out to remember, take your light, your lamp of your light away, back in, it was Isaiah. That was the connection to the 10 virgins. That your light was taken away and now it's being brought back to you. To be full of life again, to be full of the Spirit of God. As well as, and most importantly, clothed in the righteousness of the saints, defined as the Torah. Thank you.